You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Congratulations to Alabama and head coach Nick Saban. Alabama crushing Ohio State last night in Miami. That's Saban's seventh national title, six with Alabama, one with LSU, as he broke the longtime record of Bear Bryant, who had a record six national championships. And really the amazing thing about this Alabama team, Nick Saban has always been a run-first, defensive-minded head coach, and he won a national title with a record-breaking offense. And you could argue that, you know, he faces challenges that Bear Bryant couldn't have imagined. You talk about the media scrutiny, the transfer portal. You talk about players leaving early. But Saban handled all of it quite well. And we love to put an asterisk by these championships during COVID, just like with the Lakers. I don't think anybody has earned a title more so than what the Lakers did this past year. And the same with Alabama. Alabama didn't have cupcakes. They didn't play the Citadel. They didn't play Samford. They played the SEC this year. They played the SEC the entire season. And then you go into the playoffs, and they beat up on Notre Dame, and then they roughed up Ohio State last night. And keep in mind, Saban was diagnosed twice with COVID. The first one was a false positive. The next one was the real thing, but it didn't slow down Alabama. And you credit the head coach. He established a consistent level of excellence throughout the program, and I hope that he takes a moment to enjoy it. But he won't. He will not take, maybe he'll take a moment, literally a moment, that's it. He's probably calling recruits right now because he wants to work on that eighth national championship in Tuscaloosa. There's a lot of things to process from last night's game. I didn't know how healthy Ohio State was going to be. I still don't know how healthy Justin Fields was last night. They lose Trey Sermon on the first drive. And it just felt like the defensive line was not fully assembled there. And you can't have any of those, you know, mistakes. You have to have a full arsenal to go against Alabama. And they didn't have that last night. But you saw the difference. As I said 6 weeks ago, when I watched Alabama, I kept coming back to, there is no Devontae Smith elsewhere in college football. He was the best player on the field every single game that he played. And I didn't understand the logic because I'm looking at Devontae Smith. I have to take him out of the game. How do I take him out of the game? I just put two guys on him because Jaylen Waddle can't beat me. Jaylen Waddle did his best. He probably shouldn't have been in there, but he's not going to beat me. Najee Harris can beat me, but that's okay. That might be more of a slow drip than a guillotine with Devontae Smith. I just didn't understand the philosophy. And granted, you've got grown men who have got quite a lengthy resume who were doing these jobs there. But as an observer, I'm watching going, I can't let Devontae Smith have the ball. If he does, I have two guys always on him. And I kept going back to Bill Belichick. What would Belichick have done if he was facing Devontae Smith? And we're going to find this out next year in the NFL, but he always takes away your best weapon. Well, your best weapon is Devontae Smith. Mac Jones is very good. Devontae Smith is different. And I kept wondering, you sort of had single coverage. You always had somebody who was shading over, but, you know, Alabama and Steve Sarkisian called a great game. At one point, when a linebacker ended up on Devontae Smith, I thought that was inexcusable. I'm going to give Mac Jones credit, looked off the safety, but a linebacker should never be on Devontae Smith, ever, even going across the middle, because you see there's a different gear that he has. And he was unbelievable in the first half and then dislocated his finger in the second half. Who knows? He'd probably have 300 yards receiving, 20 catches if he wanted to last night. That can't happen against a team like Ohio State, even if you're missing a couple of defensive linemen there. But watching him play, and, you know, it was a treat. It really was. It was a treat to watch him this year. And Mac Jones as well. And that Alabama team. It wasn't a great defensive team, but, boy, that was a great offensive team. And I know as we move along, every quarterback is going to be expected to complete 65% of his passes, maybe 70%. You know, Mac Jones was 76%, I think, this year. But the way it is with offense now. And this is what Saban did. Saban evolved because it was a defensive-minded team, running team, and then he realized, I need to spice up my offense. And he brought in Lane Kiffin. He brought in Steve Sarkisian. You know, that to me was his signal of saying, all right, I'm joining everybody else, and when I do, look out. Now, is that offense better than LSU's offense from last year? It's a good debate. It's a fun debate, I think. But LSU had a variety of skill position players as far as wide receivers. They had a very talented running back. And Joe Burrow had the greatest year a college quarterback has ever had. Alabama, we've never counted on Alabama to have a great quarterback. You can have a good quarterback, very good quarterback. Jalen Hurts was a very good quarterback. Tua came in. What Nick Saban wants is a great offensive and defensive line. Get a couple of guys who can cover. I got wide receivers, and he always has a really good running back. Now I want a quarterback who doesn't make mistakes. I mean, really, that's what it is. But Mac Jones was more than that this year. But if you're only going to hit him twice, you're not going to beat him. And look, it was a long shot that they were going to be able to beat him, given everything that they went through at Ohio State. And who knows how much COVID ravaged that lineup. But watching last night, Alabama went onto that field knowing that they were going to win. I think Ohio State hoped they'd win. Alabama knew it was going to win. And when you lose Trey Sermon right away, and he had been unbelievable, then that's just another one of those. We're already losing players. We lost players. And then we lose our star running back as well. I started to wonder about this. I grew up loving dynasties. I grew up with UCLA basketball, the Green Bay Packers, Boston Celtics. There was a dynasty. I like that there's the team to knock off. You have to beat that team. And I don't know if you like college football where it seems predictable, because the SEC is going to play for the national championship. Somebody's going to. And Alabama has won 6 of the last 12 national championships. That's predictable. But I do want, and I think we all want, the best team to win. Like when you say, that's a great team, they deserve the national championship. Now, in college basketball, it's a little different. We like when the little guy gets a chance to play against the big guys, but we don't want them necessarily to win a championship. We want the team that is the best team the entire season, not just for a weekend or a couple of weeks. Alabama's predictable. If I was 12 years of age, I'd probably love this, but there's part of me that says, I'd like a little more variety. I'd love for college football to be spread out across the country a little bit more. Because when you think about it, when we start this next season, how many teams do you think have a chance to win the national championship? Not get in the Final Four. I'm just talking about win the championship. And you're probably going to go 6, maybe 7. 8 at the most. That's it. And 3 or 4 are going to be in the SEC. You'll have 1 in the ACC. 1 in the Big Ten. Maybe Notre Dame. And maybe you get an outlier out west. But that's about it. College football is predictable. But this is the greatest coach that we have in college sports right now. And one of the greats of all time. He's got star players. He recruits well. It's predictable, but I don't know if it's good for college football. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Want to make way for Sal Palantonio, the great football reporter for ESPN, and figured that if we could lasso Sal on a busy day and talk to him about what exactly happened in Philadelphia and led to the parting of Doug Peterson and the Philadelphia Eagles. Sal, thanks for joining us on short notice. So was Doug Peterson fired?
Yes, he was fired. And I think the chronology of it, Dan, is pretty simple. You got to go back to last year. He announced that Mike Groh, his then offensive coordinator, would be staying on. And then within a day later, he had to reverse direction and Mike Rowe was fired along with some other assistant. So I think it started there. And then it built up to the point where he said in his postseason press conference with Howie Roseman that he wanted to have more control over picking coaches and perhaps players. And that was a signal. And maybe it was a signal that we didn't really catch on to enough. But it was pretty clear. And then there were some offensive assistants let go. He had this group of offensive coaches helping him, Morningwig, Scangarella, gone. And he wanted to make Press Taylor his offensive coordinator, elevate him from quarterback's coach. And the organization didn't agree with that direction, and so they parted ways.
How attractive is this Eagles, John?
I don't know, Dan. I don't know how attractive it is. Listen, there's one of 32 jobs, right? You know, somebody's going to take the job. There's going to be a lot of money involved. You don't turn down an NFL head coaching job. But if you have seven openings, you have a lot of more lucrative situations, more attractive situations. Let's start with the obvious. You're walking into a home-cooked quarterback controversy. That's never good for a head coach. Two, your offensive line was absolutely devastated by injuries. 13 different offensive line combinations, most in the NFL. It destroyed Wentz's ability to play. And let's be truthful about it. Jalen Hurts didn't look good on the run either. Constantly under pressure. Your general manager made a $136 million mistake and kept his job. And so you're walking into a situation as a head coach where you already have the GM picked for you. You have two quarterbacks, one of whom had one of the worst seasons in NFL history, certainly in franchise history. And so your first question has to be to Jeffrey Lurie, what are we doing at quarterback? And he says back to you right then, he says, can you fix Carson Wentz? And you say, oh, time out. The decision to keep Carson Wentz is an organizational decision. So what's the decision by the organization? Are we keeping him? Or are we trying to move him? Are we shopping him? If we're keeping him, if you're telling me my job is to fix Carson Wentz, then that's a completely different conversation.
Do you think Doug Peterson's happy he's out of there?
I know Doug well. Doug is a really centered, grounded, nice guy. I've been covering the league going back to 1988. He's my favorite guy I've ever had to cover. Favorite, easy, bar none. He's available. He is truthful. He's a solid family guy. He's about making sure his players are taken care of. And he's a really easy guy to talk to and get along with. And I think Doug is about right now. In fact, I talked to someone close to him yesterday, Dan. Doug is right now about taking some time, letting the air out of the pressure a little bit, go back to his home in Jupiter, Florida, with his wife, Jeannie, and his beautiful family. They're very faith-based, faith-centered. They'll talk about it. They'll pray about it. And then they'll decide what to do. So I think he's relieved that he doesn't have to deal with what he had. Listen, you got to remember, he started the season in August with COVID-19. You remember that, right? He survived the deadliest disease known to man in 100 years. And so maybe he's thinking, okay, I got to just be mindful of where I am in life. I brought a Super Bowl title to a city that never had one. I have a beautiful family. I've made a lot of money. Let's just take a breath and see where we are.
We're talking to Sal Palantonio of the Mothership. Yeah, just trying to figure this out. When you start to look at, they got some older players. They've missed on some draft picks. The quarterbacking situation there, there's other openings that feel like they're far more advantageous for somebody if they're going to take their first NFL job, that they would go into that. The expectation level is still high in Philadelphia.
It's, a little bit.
Yeah. 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 So but would they let him go if they didn't already have a plan in place? Because normally, if you make a decision like this, you have a pretty good idea of what you're going to do to follow up this decision.
Yeah, and this is something that you and I talked about last week. I was against firing Doug Peterson, and I'm still against it. And I said to you last week, I want to know what the plan is, right? You say you want a revolution, let me know what the plan is. So right now I feel like they're interested in interviewing Mike Kafka, the quarterback's coach, under Andy Reid in Kansas City. They tried to make Kafka a candidate for offensive coordinator last year and were rebuffed by Big Red. I think they will look at Eric Bieniemy and will definitely interview him. I think they will have a sincere, authentic interest in interviewing Deuce Daly, their running backs coach and assistant head coach, and they should.
Yeah.
Deuce is really well-liked in the locker room, and it's Deuce's time for sure, 100%. And they should look at him. I know they're interested in Brian Daboll. Daboll is a Bob Lamont client. So is Howie Roseman. As everybody has well documented, Lamont likes to have the GM and the coach in the same place. Problem is, I think the Jets and the Chargers both have serious interest in Daboll, and Daboll has serious interest in those teams, which goes back to your point. Those two places may be more attractive than Philly because of Herbert and the second overall pick.
I'll leave you with this. Do we still know exactly what happened with the Nate Sudfeld decision and when he was going to play and whose call it was? Because I'm still fascinated by that, and it feels like that locker room may have gotten fractured because of this.
Dan, to quote Bill Belichick, I'm on to Cincinnati.
Great to talk to you, Sal. Thanks for joining us. Sal Palantonio, the mothership.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
The Cleveland Browns will face off with the Kansas City Chiefs and their star center, J.C. Treader, back on the program. He's also the NFL Players Association president. Glad to have you on after the big win there. I was curious, when you saw the snap by Pouncey over Ben's head, as a center, when do you know that you've had a snap that is not going to hit its target?
Usually right away. And I think in my career, if you go back and listen to TV copies, I think they've caught me instantly cussing the moment the play gets started, because you know it immediately almost.
So it's basically an oh bleep.
Yeah.
Do you apologize to the – how long do you wait to apologize to the quarterback?
They usually know that the center's usually pretty upset as is, so I think they usually lay off you for a little bit and keep their distance because they know you're pretty fired up yourself.
What was your reaction when you saw that snap?
It's a little funny because it's I probably every offensive line does it, but pretty much every first series of the game, you kind of sit there and say, man, a defensive touchdown would be nice right now, huh? And then all of a sudden, the first play, that happens. So, it got a few chuckles out of the guys on the sidelines, because we've done that almost every game, said that before the first snap of the game, and then it happens. And it just gives you a bunch of momentum, kind of a shot in the arm to get that game started.
The 28-0, when you're leading 28-0, it's still the first quarter. Like, that's I don't know what that feeling's like, because you still have the whole, three more quarters and you're playing Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh. What was that like, that feeling?
Yeah, I mean, the first thought is you can't get complacent. You can't start thinking that that's enough. You know how talented they are on offense and how talented they are on defense. You got to keep scoring. And you just got to keep plugging away, understanding that you're off to a great start, but there's still a lot of time left and they can do a lot of damage really quickly.
But when Pittsburgh cuts it to 12, what are you thinking?
We got to score. You knew you had to put on a drive that's going to extend the lead, push it further ahead, and just give the defense the time. I think If you look back at the time of possession, we knew our defense was on the field the vast majority of that game, and we knew we had to put a drive together, a long one, that gave them a time to rest and recover and then get back out there to finish strong.
And it may sound strange, JC, but I did say this yesterday. Without a crowd there, if there was a crowd, I don't think Pittsburgh falls behind 28 to nothing. And I just don't know if the crowd allows them to. It's weird. I just felt that there was no crowd. It felt like that neutralized Heinz Field for you guys. How did it feel not hearing that crowd that you've normally heard before?
Well, I think it also impacts the momentum of the game, where it's without the fans there to kind of revitalize a team or re-energize the team. What's happening in the game has a lot more impact on the momentum of the game, where when something goes wrong, the team itself has to kind of straighten the course and not rely on the outside factor, the fans getting more involved and getting the crowd noise up. So I think that definitely impacts it without fans at the stadium. When something like that goes wrong, I think it impacts teams a little more.
He's the Browns center, J.C. Treader, joining us. He's also the NFL Players Association president. Tell me the story about Blake Hentz that Baker said he didn't even know who his offensive guard was, you know, getting ready for the game. Like, how's that happen?
Well, we've had some injury issues and some COVID issues in the last couple of weeks. We brought some new guys into the team, and we haven't been able to really practice that much. So we haven't had much time at the facility for the new guys to get used to practice and get to know everybody. So once our fill-in left guard got hurt, you know, we had to bring in a guy who was here for a week and only practiced really one day with us. And he came jogging in. I remember pulling him aside and I was like, hey, what don't you know right now? Like, what are you worried about? So I can try to fill you in these next 3 minutes before we have to go out there and keep playing. But yeah, I think Baker said that he introduced himself in the locker room before the game for the first time they actually spoke. It's just kind of a crazy year.
How important is practice this time of the year in person?
It depends. There's definitely a use for it when it comes to keeping your acclimation up and keeping your muscles and tendons and tissues loaded so you don't have soft tissue injuries. You need to be able to run around and cut for that reason. But I think there's definitely a benefit to keeping guys healthy and having guys fresh. And there's always that balance of what to do. Now, we are forced into kind of an unscheduled mini bye week. And I know when I got back to the practice field on Friday, it was probably the best I've felt this late in the season in a long time. So there are definitely benefits too. And it's up to the coaches to kind of make that balance of how much rest do you give, how much practice do you need. And now our hand was forced. But I think it definitely, if you look at a glass half full, helped us starting fast and just playing really fast.
What do you think Coach Stefanski was like at home in his basement?
Well, I'm sure a lot of nerves, a little feeling of helplessness. After the first snap, probably those feelings go away a little bit, probably settles you in, knowing that you get a big play to start the game. But I'm sure it's tough. He's been such a great leader for us all season. To not be able to be there and be in it and help lead us, I'm sure is a difficult thing to sit back and have to watch.
What's the game plan against Kansas City offensively?
Well, I mean, they're super talented in both facets, both their offense and their defense. I think as in any game, we have to be able to run the ball. That's kind of been our staple all year. We have to be able to run the ball, keep the ball in our possession as much as possible. And then we got to be able to protect the quarterback. And they've got great rushers on that side of the ball, just like Pittsburgh did. And we have to do a good job of putting our guys in position to protect as long as possible, as long as Baker needs to make the throws he needs to make to keep moving the chains.
Do you find yourself at all trying to calm him down, Baker?
No, I don't think I could, but I think he's been so great for us, both as a player this year and a leader. And he's really taken that next step in both of those departments this entire year. And he's everything you want as on the sideline as a leader, on the field as a leader, in the locker room as a leader.
I just don't want him to get into this. I got to match Patrick Mahomes. I don't want him to get into this ego thing. You guys know your identity. And I think that's the reason why you guys are so dangerous is you're a running team and play action. And can you tell Baker I said that, JC, just so you remind him, don't try to do anything. You know, you're not Mahomes. You don't need to be Mahomes. You can still beat Mahomes, but you got to listen to me, okay?
I'll let him know. But I think Baker knows his only focus is winning right now. So I don't think he's worried about stats or anything like that. He's just worried about what the final score at the end of the game is and whether the Browns have more points than whoever they're playing.
As the NFL Players Association president, everybody's all in on an extra game next season?
Well, we already negotiated that.
I know, but is everybody all in on that? What was the vote? Do you know what the percentage was of those who said yay and nay?
I think it passed by like 60 total votes, right around there. So it was a tight vote, and I know that was a point of contention, was the additional game. But that's what the majority of the players voted to pass with the gains we made in revenue, minimum salaries, player safety issues. So we got gains back in exchange for that game, and now we're continuing to work on those player safety issues and continue to try to make changes for the betterment of the players' health and well-being, even after the CBA is done.
I just worry about another couple of dead games, though, JC, that don't mean anything. And I don't know. I just – everybody wants more, but more is not better here. And I know it gives you guys an extra paycheck, but I don't think the quality of play – you're going to have teams that are going to be clinching in Week 15. And then what do you do with those games? And then what if you're playing a playoff team, like Philadelphia did against Washington? Those are the things I'm concerned most about.
Yeah, I think that's what the league has to look at. So they purchased the option to go to 17 games, and they have to make the decision of when they want to and if they want to. So, you know, they've already made that purchase, and now they have to kind of make those decisions and look at all the information of what's best for the game of football itself.
Also, they haven't decided yet. They purchased the right to do it, but they haven't decided if they're going to do it next year.
Right. I think the last I've heard is they've talked about how they would do it schedule wise and what they would need to do, but I don't think they've officially moved forward with the 17th game as of now.
Well, good luck in Kansas City, and tell Baker that people did believe in the Browns. Okay. That
will do.
People did and do believe in the Browns. Oh, I hate when players do that. Okay. And tell him to keep his hat on backwards as well. You know, I'm fine with that. I don't have any problem with that. Okay.
That sounds good.
All right. Thank you, JC.
Absolutely. Have a good one.
JC Treader, he went to an Ivy League school, McLovin. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app. We welcome in the Buccaneers head coach. Coach, thanks for joining us. Did you watch the national title game?
I sure did, and what a game. What a team.
What do you take away from – how do you watch that game? As a coach or as a fan?
Oh, definitely as a coach. You know, watching the ebb and flow of the game and the excitement of it. You know, early in the ball game, I said, oh, we got to have a heck of a game. I don't know if either one of them is going to stop the other one. And then Alabama's defense really rose up. And, well, the big three of Alabama might be the best big three to come out of college in a long time.
But when you see DeVonta Smith, what do you see in how that translates to the NFL?
No, it translates. He's got instant speed. He's got one of those bodies that he can twist and turn and make those back shoulder catches look routine. And then they're not routine. He's strong. He's slender, but he's strong. And, he will make a great transition.
I also am not sure about this, and you being a quarterback's guy, when you see someone like Mac Jones, he's surrounded by all this talent. But if you're assessing his talent, how hard is it to remove the talent around him to just assess his talents?
Well, I think the first thing you look for in a quarterback is a brain. He's obviously a really, really bright young man. And then accuracy. And he has great accuracy with the ball. He is not one of the more mobile guys that some people really love. But if you're going to play from the pocket and move him around like they do, very much similar to what we do, he's a very talented young man.
Who does DeVonta Smith remind you of?
He's kind of a mixture of Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones. He's got the height, speed, you know, not quite the bulk of Julio, but the slipperiness of Calvin. I mean, Alabama's turned out some great receivers. He might be one of the best next to Julio.
And he's got that different gear. Like very few people, coach, have that gear where you go, whoa, that's game changing speed.
Yeah, and it's frightening because he doesn't look like he has it. He's just gliding. And when he takes those screens and turns the corners, I mean, those are great players at Ohio State also, a lot of speed, and just makes them look slow. It's just absolutely amazing to me.
I see you got Bear Bryant, a picture over your shoulder. Is that a painting or a photo?
It was a cover of Time magazine. It's been with me since 1983, and it's always on that side. But one of my players' fathers gave it to me in Temple University my first year. And it's always been with me. He always sits over my right shoulder.
Did you ever meet Coach?
I coached for him. His last 2 years, I was assistant at Alabama.
Oh, okay. So you take even greater pride in Alabama winning last night?
Yeah, if I have to root for another team than Virginia Tech, it's probably Alabama. It's still Temple.
If you were going to explain Bear Bryant to somebody who had never seen him, off your experience, how would you explain Bear Bryant?
And football acumen, the best personnel manager I've ever seen, because people don't realize we played 66 players in every game. He substituted every player, offense, defense, special team. You get your tail fired if you send a player across that sideline. And I saw that almost happen. But just a master of people. He could recognize if you were too high, too low, and just one word from him. He loved ripping my ass, and he loved picking up everybody else.
Talking to Bruce Arians, the Buccaneers defeated Washington on Saturday night. They got the Saints coming up on Sunday night on Fox. Let me go back to that game with Washington. How much tape did you have on Taylor Heinicke?
Very, very little. Very, very little. You knew he was an athletic guy. Until you see those young guys like that in the moment, you don't know if they have it or not. That kid's got it. I mean, he was calm. He was accurate. He obviously was very, very slippery. And so I would think he just made a name for himself that he'll be in the league for a while.
But do you go back to his Old Dominion tape when he was in college?
No, we just looked at what we had, the little bit we had of the NFL.
And you said after the game that, and I'm paraphrasing, Washington's front didn't really make you nervous or concern you at all. Is that an accurate quote?
Yeah, it's pretty accurate. I mean, everybody had to have – you got to have a storyline going into every game. And when Chase said he wanted Tom, that became the storyline. They're a heck of a young front, don't get me wrong. But I knew our guys would take the challenge and have been playing so well, I didn't think it would be too big of a problem.
What's been the biggest surprise about Tom Brady for you?
I think the way he handles younger players. He's another coach. I mean, he really is. I mean, the athletic stuff is shocking for a guy 43. But the way he handles young guys and old guys, he's coaching nonstop. And it always pisses me off because I'll say something to a player and they'll look at me. He says it and they go, okay, Tom, I'll do it.
Who yells at the younger players more, Tom or you?
I think I got him beat on that one. But game day, it might be him.
Could you see him as a coach when it's all said and done?
No, I think he is probably like Peyton. If they were, you wouldn't want to work for him because they're perfectionists and they wouldn't accept anything but perfection. And every now and then you got to give a little.
And it's interesting that you say that because I would talk to Tony Dungy about Peyton, say, how would he be as an analyst? And he said, well, he would be great, but he would drive you crazy. Because he would do so much research. He would drive your researchers crazy because of his preparation. Is Brady and Peyton similar like that?
Very, very similar. I used to call Peyton the piranha because if I had a 20-minute meeting, I'd have to have an hour and a half worth of shit just to keep him occupied. And the poor other quarterbacks, they couldn't take notes fast enough. But and Tom's exact same way. Their attention to detail is unbelievable.
Because you go into these meetings and you're the coach and you want to be able to tell the player something, Peyton's telling you probably more than you're supposed to be telling him.
It's like, did you see this corner? Did you see this left corner? I said, yeah, you mean 26? He said, yeah, watch his hips. Watch his hips. I'm like, that's good shit.
Oh, does Brady make you laugh?
Oh, all the time. Between he and Gronk now, it's hilarious sometimes. But on the field, two of the most serious dudes I've ever coached.
But Gronk, like, I never know if he's putting on a show as an act or he's really like that, Coach.
Oh, that's Gronk. That's just the way he walks on the field and There's a swagger there, but it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of, he enjoys doing what he's doing, that's for sure.
Can there be any surprises in this game, the third game with the Saints? You know, the personnel, everybody knows everybody. Should there be surprises in this game?
I don't think so. I mean, there'll be a trick play or two. You know, New Orleans has got a great bag of tricks, and with Taysom Hill and everybody else, and they got great athletes, but Marshawn Lattimore knows Michael Evans and on and on and on, you know, it's a turnover battles, but we've lost this game on turnovers. And that's something we have to address.
But if I said you can take out Michael Thomas or you can take out Alvin Kamara, you get that option. Who are you taking out of the game?
Well, for us, it would probably be Michael Thomas. Knock on wood, we've done a decent job of keeping Alvin under control. Our run game defense has been outstanding, but Michael Thomas has hurt us.
Yeah, and him just coming back and looking pretty good in this last game. Kamara, I'm never quite sure. Like, is he a hybrid? Is he a true running back to you, or who does he remind you of?
Oh, Edgerrin James. I mean, not Marshall Faulk. A little bit Edgerrin James, but Marshall Faulk. I mean, a guy with tremendous speed, great runner, especially outside zone runner. And then he's a wide receiver. He has so many ways he can beat you.
And no home field advantage. How much does that factor in, if it does at all?
It's huge. I'm glad there's going to be 3,000, because when we were there for the opener, it was dead. I mean, dead. And it's like, it was eerie. At least we'll have some noise.
Oh, so you want that ambiance?
Oh, I want to hear people booing or cheering. I want to hear all that. Yeah, I mean, it adds to the game. I mean, that dead silence or that airplane noise, it's not been good.
When you can hear like the air conditioner buzzing or whatever, the lights are buzzing overhead, that has to be a surreal feeling.
I mean, going to Monday Night Football in New York and Thursday night in Chicago and not hearing a sound, it's mind-boggling to me. I've been in this game too long, and the crowd, the fans, that they're the game.
But do you have to be more quiet on the sidelines when you're yelling instructions or anything? Does Brady have to be quiet when he's in the huddle?
Not any more than normal. You know, defenses are getting their signals. You're getting your signals, but cussing out referees is probably the hardest thing.
Are you allowed to? Do they give you leeway to curse them out?
Yes and no. I mean, if you're smart, you just turn your back, and they can still hear you.
They may think you're yelling at somebody else when you're yelling at them.
No, they can't flag you if you're not face to face.
Well, you got your mask on too, so they.
Well, I got a mask and a shield, so I don't think it counts.
Oh, hey, it's great to talk to you again, and have fun against New Orleans. Thanks for joining us.
Appreciate it, brother, and invite you to be on our celebrity guest panel for the Rivals. It's fun.
That's arians.rivalsmedia.com, and I'll give the plug. I'll say goodbye to you, Coach. I know you got more important things to do. Thanks for joining
us.
But Bruce is partnering with Rivals Media. It's a mobile game where fans predict the outcomes of the Bucks games, win prizes, and you're able to donate to the Arians Family Foundation, which supports at-risk youth. Fans can play for free. It's arians.rivalsmedia.com.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.